Get the latest sports in 1 hour. It's Crunch Time, weekdays from 3 p.m. to 4 p.m.
I hope you're ready. It's that time.
Let's do it!
Climb aboard, all aboard, for the radio ride known as Sports Talk.
I got a bad feeling about this.
I can't take it anymore.
I am losing my mind.
Brought to you by Guarantee RV.
I know that, dude.
On Highway 99 in Junction City. Online at GuaranteeRV.com.
Alex is sitting there saying, what the heck are they talking about?
I would have Mariota out at 3 in the morning drunk, pawning his Heisman Trophy to get into an illegal poker house.
And now, a guy with lots of issues.
Yeah, I kind of do have issues.
No, I mean, like, lots of issues.
Shut up and get on with the program. Dude is a snot.
And broadcasting them, searching for answer.
Who is this?
It's Steve Tannen.
Have another donut, you fat pig.
Balls and a strike. Outside target, Chirinos the pitch. Swing and a line drive, slice down the right field line toward the corner. Springer back, looking up, and this one is gone! It hits the foul pole, and the Nationals lead! Howie Kendrick has done it again! A slicing two-run homer off the right field foul pole! Do you believe it, Howie Kendrick? Part two!
Love the part two. Charlie Slows, play-by-play guy on the radio for the World Series champion Washington Nationals, 106.1, The Fan. Wait, is it 106.7 or is it 106.1? Yeah, it's 106.7, The Fan. Anyway, good luck in prison. If you want to join us, it's the 5 o'clock hour on an All Hallowed Eve.
Tannenism.
Weebles wobble, but they don't fall down. You still have 1 hour to make it over to our trunk or treat, which is taking place behind Valley River Center. Follow the It Is Balloon, courtesy of 95.3 The Score and Kendall Toyota. They've got the cool new cars, the 2020s out there, and their trunks, as you might imagine, are filled with I Want Candy. For not only the kids, by the way, parents, you're allowed to grab a handful. So, once again, Halloween, parking lot behind Valley River Center. Appreciate the support of our friends at Kendall Toyota and putting on the Ritz from 95.3 The Score. The Score. So, it looks like, what does it look like? That Gerrit Cole has certainly thrown his final pitch in an Astros uniform. That guy couldn't wait the hell to get out of there, it seemed like. He said something after the game along the lines of, I'm no longer a member of this organization. It's like, are you kidding me? You got the uniform on, dude.
He got out of that locker room and threw on Scott Boras' hat as quickly as he could. And then when asked about it, he's like, I can't comment about it as a former player of the organization. I don't have anything to say. But speaking for myself, like an hour after the game ended, and
that's,
you're just
cold.
You're moving on to how much money can I make because I'm the best pitcher in baseball right now.
He's going to get $230 million.
Oh, well, 250.
But over 5 years, 6 years?
I think from what I've heard from a lot of people talking about it, Jeff Passan, David Sampson, a lot of the other people on Twitter and things that I'm reading, it's like 250 is the minimum, and you've got five or six teams that are all going to be actually competing for legit number one starting pitching for a guy who's been relatively healthy his entire career, and the difference is going to come down to, is the team going to want to pay that out over 7 years? Or is someone going to be willing to go eight? And it's,
boy, anybody who goes seven even is just—it's kind of stupid.
The biggest difference is going to be term, and maybe if Cole is just so set on playing with one team, if he's that desperate to go back to California, he can continue to dominate the rest of the AL West. If he goes to the Angels, he can become enemy number one to me personally. If he signs with the Dodgers, he can sign with the Dodgers.
I'm just trying to think what their rotation looks like, what their financial commitment is, when are they going to have to pay Bellinger?
Bellinger, I think, is still arbitration for another. He only played his third year this year, so he's got at least one.
He's
more
arbitration eligible now. He's not a free agent until 2024.
Okay, so that's 4 years of basically you've got Bellinger under team control. You restructured Kershaw's contract, so he's not making as much. Bueller's under team control for some time. A couple other.
That's about it. I mean, I'm sorry, right now, you Bellinger. Bueller, who is not this year, next year arbitration eligible. He's not free agent eligible for another 5 years. But still, arbitration is going to cost you. And I think you're more likely to see them do the 3-year, $48 million right, or something like that with him.
But still, you're getting an MVP caliber player at like a bargain. Like, that's a great deal. That's a fantastic deal that you can get as a team.
Yeah, but if they've got Kershaw and Bueller, don't they have other needs, especially the bullpen? I mean, they're going to spend $35 million a year on another starter after they just won 107 games. I'm telling. I don't know. I don't think the Dodgers are realistic. That's what I'm saying. That's my statement.
I mean, Kenley Jansen is still a pretty solid closer.
Mm.
It's not like middle relief pitchers are super expensive, and right, you can basically find them anywhere. You can turn any starting pitcher that you have currently in your farm system into a middle reliever who throws 105 miles an hour if you just wanted to. It's not like you can find bullpen arms anywhere. You can't find Cy Young quality true ace number one pitchers out on the market just out there. They don't just grow right on trees, even though the Dodgers tend to have probably a farm somewhere where they're growing and manufacturing baseball prospects like they have been. I think they're a serious threat because they're a team that wants to win. They're desperate for it because they've gone the entire decade with winning the division 7 years in a row and coming away with no titles. You can always use more starting pitching, and they've certainly got the money to do it. It's just a matter of how over the luxury tax are they going to be willing to go, because that seems to be the soft cap that teams are afraid to go over.
I'm betting he doesn't sign with the Dodgers. Okay. It's as simple as that.
Fair enough. I'm saying they're an option. Their name will be in the mix. I don't know if he'll go there. Their name will be in the mix.
You know, having pitched at UCLA, being from Orange County, it seems attractive to him if he's concerned with going home. But he's also at the point now where at age 29, which, by the way, he will be 29 until September. So you're not signing a 30-year-old. But so for 29, 6 years, I think at 6 years, you're asking for an injury for a guy who's going to have logged a lot of innings. So that 7 or 8 years also doesn't seem completely realistic. All right. 284-8571. The Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline.
Where is he more not likely to sign? Is it to return to Houston after the show he put on?
I can't imagine he's going back there.
Right, because when you leave like that, it pretty much... that's
he's more likely to sign with Miami.
Right.
and that's like a zero. By the way, they've doled out Joel Embiid and Karl Anthony Towns each got 2-game suspensions. And a lot of people were offering their take about that brawl last night in Philly and Minnesota. And my angle was, so? It wasn't exactly malice at the palace. Didn't spill over into the fans. There were no coaches. Nobody left the bench. And like a lot of analysts aptly pointed out, it's just not commonplace anymore. The players are different. They're constantly on the self-plug, self-brand. You very rarely see superstars mix it up in an actual fight. And are we considering Embiid and Anthony Towns superstars? I mean, they're great players, but... And I don't usually lean on in the day, but... You know, when you think of the Celtics of Bird and the Sixers of Dr. J or the Bulls of Jordan and the Bad Boy Pistons, you know, when they mixed it up, nobody was concerned about what sneaker brand you wore, who your agent was, or where you were going to dine after the game. And there's always that legendary shot of Larry Bird and Julius Erving going at it and ending up with each with their hand wrapped around the other's throat. And my favorite part about that, it wasn't even in the playoffs. It was November of 1984. Boston were the defending champs. Philly was the champs from the year before. And Bird ended up throwing an elbow, got whistled for an offensive foul. And I heard Dr. J tell the story that all of a sudden, Bird was making his way down court, and it was like he was beyond pissed. And the unique aspect was even for 35 years ago, they did commercials together. They were both Converse guys. They even did an ad for Spalding Sporting Goods. So they've got a good off-court relationship. Then the brouhaha ensued, and there's this infamous photo of both of them with their hands around the other guy's neck. And I love the funny aspect. They made a pact after to not dignify the photo because they each say they've appeared at card shows over the years, and fans or promoters have tried to get them to sign the photo, and neither ever has. I'm telling you, if you Google Dr. J, Larry Bird, choke, and hit images, there'll be like 70 different pictures, cards, everything coming up, but you'll never see either, any of them autographed. But and by the way, the Minnesota Timberwolves and Philadelphia 76ers, I got news for you. That's not really a rivalry. You know why? They played last night on September 30th, October 30th. You know when they play again? March 24th. You know when they play again after that? Next year, because they're not even in the same conference.
I think you mean in the NBA Finals, Steve.
Right, mini Philly. My bad, you got me, Nick. All right, 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. Let's bring in Josh. Josh, good afternoon. How's it going?
Hey, Steve, I had to chime in on this subject because I know I'm going to sound like the ultimate old man. But I remember, man, back in the day, the 80s, the NBA fights, I mean, they were throwing haymakers. I mean, Kermit Washington in the 70s breaking Rudy Tomjanovich's eye socket. Nowadays, it's like this wasn't even a fight. They were, like, rolling around the ground, and then afterwards they had a Twitter feud. What? That's the most ultimate, like, it's not even, what is it, Gen Z thing ever now. It's like they didn't. Every NBA fight now is just them pushing each other and yelling at each other, and then it's graduated into then a Twitter feud afterwards.
Yeah, it's the most 2019 fight ever. Although I forgot which one it was, Towns or Embiid, did throw a haymaker, and if that landed, maybe it's a different story, but it didn't.
But, I mean, people who have not weren't around in the 80s and the 70s, just Google NBA fights or YouTube NBA fights back then. That was a legit fight.
Oh, yeah, Maurice Lucas versus Darryl Dawkins in the 77 finals.
Yeah.
They squared off like in boxing stances.
Oh, yeah. And people who try to argue that anybody else is the GOAT over Michael Jordan, just Google those Jordan Pistons games with the Jordan rules where he was just getting mugged and still managed to score 30. I mean, That tells it all right there.
No, that was their reaction to the Jordan rules. Well, if they're going to call a foul, we're going to foul them.
Yeah, yeah. So, like I said, I'm sounding like an old man, but this younger generation has no idea. They need to go educate themselves on YouTube.
That's why YouTube's there, right, Josh?
Yeah, for sure, right?
All right. Hey, have a good one. The most unbelievable thing you'll ever see. So this has to be the 87 or 88 East Finals. So it's the Celtics versus the Pistons. And, you know, when you think of some of the ticky-tack fouls, so Robert Parrish had just had it with Laimbeer. Robert Parrish grabbed him, threw him to the ground as he's going down, like threw two punches at him, and no foul is called because they didn't land. They would have had him brought up on charges and exiled into the Russian wilderness if they tried that now. That was the best part about it when they, you know, I was watching this on NBA TV probably over the summer and they were showing these great rivalries. Oh, no, it was the special on the Bad Boys. And that was the thing. It was like, watch this play, and let me tell you the most incredible part about it. They go to the floor. They're elbowing. They're punching. Parrish has him as he's going down. You know, Parrish is 7'1", like 270. He tries to punch him in the face, and it's like the refs are like, yeah, no harm, no foul. Just play on. So, yeah, little bit different, by the way. I don't know, it would take too long to do, but considering the Philadelphia 76ers have been relevant for about a half hour the last decade and a half, is there any two teams you could put together that is you're not even allowed to say rivalry than the Minnesota Timberwolves and the Philadelphia 76ers? And for anybody who says, well, this is how rivalries start, no, it's not. It's how people start talking crap that they're never going to meet. I mean, what are the odds of the Timberwolves making the finals? And, you know, I know a lot of people are talking about them. Yeah, that's old Philly's going to the finals. They still have a point guard who can't shoot. And the fact he posted a video of himself hitting a three in his backyard doesn't exactly make him Steve Nash. So relax. My old man is a television repairman. Got this ultimate set of tools. I can fix it.
Tannenism.
All right. So we've got NFL football. So the Monday nighter, the Dolphins. Pittsburgh fans were booing during that game, which goes to show what I've always said. It's been coming over the years. Fan bases who knock other fans for their behavior are just, you live in a bubble. You're clueless. You have no idea what you're talking about. Be it college football, hoops, NFL, NBA, MLB, blah, 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 blah. Go into any stadium and it's about even. The diehards, the socialites, the bandwagoners. Once upon a time, I think it was noticeable. You know, you had more knowledgeable fans. But with the way people move around and all the information at our fingertips, and as great plays happen, you know, young people become more attached to players and fans become more attached to their fantasy teams. And although I have heard some around here make a justified comment that maybe the crowd at Hayward Field is unique because, A, it's track and field. They have a tendency to break out in cheers for an athlete who may have just cranked out a personal best. But that's not typical because is there another venue in America that is more known for big-time track and field events in the modern era? I mean, it's where the elite meet. That's why it's track town. And by the way, elite meet, get it? Pun intended.
Oh, wow.
But as far as the major team sports, sorry, you're not going to meet a lot of people who have a more close connection to a major college fan base and a major pro fan base. And proportionately, here's the difference I see between New York pro fans and Pac-12 college fans. None. Zippo, nada, niet. So seeing the Steeler fans booing 8-10 years ago, I would have maybe been a little heartbroken because, you know, a backup quarterback, a franchise who's made the divisional round the season before last, the AFC title game, the season before that, knowing it's a franchise in transition. But it just proves my point that proportionately, unless you show me data, all fan bases are the same. And you know what my go-to thing is? Well, I was at Autzen Stadium, and there was a bunch of Duck fans acting like jerks. Really? You ran into a lot of Duck fans at Autzen, did you? Wow, didn't see that coming. You mean they weren't at Memorial Stadium in Lincoln that Saturday when the Ducks were home?
Speaking of Lincoln, Nebraska fans are the only fans I've never heard anything bad about. They might be the exception to the rule.
Well, they also have The streak's still alive,
right,
since
right.
The Kennedy administration.
So all of the people in Nebraska have to be at that stadium every Saturday,
right.
So they can't be mean anywhere else because they have to
Because if they get banned,
right.
If one Nebraska fan gets banned, the streak's over.
It's exactly. I can't think of another Nebraska fan that doesn't live in Nebraska.
Maybe it was public radio. Maybe it was when I first started on commercial radio when Todd McKim was still the sports director and lead sports announcer for KVAL. I mentioned something about, you know, I was impressed by the Nebraska fans. He goes, have you ever been to Lincoln? I'm like, no. He says, there's nothing else to do there. And it's like, sounded mean, but so that I think you get the gist of my
point. Spot the lie, though. Spot the lie.
And the bottom line is, it's just when I hear Oregon fans or other fans, it's like, oh, God, I put up with the same crap from Yankees fans. And we were, it's like, yeah, because if you go to Yankee Stadium, you're dealing with the ultimate in rational and reason, and they're not elitist, they're not spoiled, they don't have unreasonable expectations. I mean, Aaron Judge spoke for Yankee fans. You know, the season was a failure. Really? You made the Final Four? It's a failure. That doesn't reek of entitlement or anything. But anyway. So here's where we stand. Aside from tonight, the November schedule is upon us. We get Frisco at Arizona tonight. And among the big ones we have, how weird is it? Houston at Jacksonville is an important game in the AFC South this weekend. Vikings at Chiefs.
Oh, boy.
Although, Nick, I would assume you're more focused on Jets at Dolphins.
Why?
Because you're just obsessed with this number one pick, and your other one was Dolphins Bengals late in the year.
Oh well, no, that's the number one obsession. Still, is we need to get
it could tweak though, because if the Jets lose,
I think even the Jets are competent enough to beat these Dolphins.
You sure about that?
Yeah, I'm gonna think.
Sure,
I'm 50-50, but it's a lot. It's still not great. I actually thought the Dolphins might at least be trying last week, but no. Dolphins Bengals Week 16. You'll have a pair of 0-14 teams going at it on Sunday Night Football. That game should be covered like the Super Bowl. The Bengals aren't going to be good. They're not going to be getting better. They sat the Red Rifle Andy Dalton, so they're not going to be good. They're going to be sitting AJ Green for some reason, even though he's like, I don't not want to be here, but I also, if you're not going to play me, then trade me because I want to play, which is
it's a walking headache.
Exactly. And then the Dolphins are the Dolphins, and they knew they were going to be bad. They traded away all of the good players that they had. Kenyon Drake was the last of them. They got all first round picks to get back for it. It's literally the Super Tank Bowl will be happening, and that Sunday, I don't care what else is going on, I'm watching Dolphins Bengals from start to finish.
Wait, one question.
Telling you right now.
Would it be the ultimate where the Dolphins are so committed, they just forfeit?
Maybe. That's the thing.
I don't know where they are. I got nothing.
Right now, it's just a dream, and they'll probably have, they'll both be 2-12 or whatever at the time. And
ruin everything.
Right, and they'll still be in contention for the number one pick, but if they're not actually winless, then the game at last loses a whole bunch of its aura around it. But can you, these teams that are, committed to trying to get a better draft pick by beating out all of the other teams by losing, you're facing a team that's literally doing the same thing. What kind of game plan goes on? Are you trying to win? Is the other team how do both teams, if they're constantly playing, nine man rushes on 3rd and 15 to try and give up the first down, how does that work when both teams are trying to
How about a research project?
Oh no.
What's the deepest that we've seen into a season where both teams played, where both teams were winless? So with really something on the bottom line.
I think it was...
Because now you're talking my language.
Right. That's what I'm trying to figure out. Is I don't know the historics of it, but if those two teams are actually unbeaten, winless at that time, if they're actually winless, that is an incredibly important game because it's literally going to decide who gets the number one pick, unless whoever wins then loses the next week or messes it all up or whatever with all the math. But I think...
Why are we so obsessed with this?
Because it's funny. Because these are two... the Dolphins aren't admitting that they're tanking, but they're very clearly tanking, and the Bengals just realized it last week when they're like, oh, we're winless, we don't want Randy Dalton around, let's get rid of him, and we'll just move on to the future, we're on to Cincinnati 2.0, is what Cincinnati is saying. That game is going to be incredibly, incredibly important, and I think a lot of people are interested to see how tanks work and what happens after that.
How tanks work.
Yes.
All right, it's a special course they're teaching at Lane Community. It's not, and ironically, it has nothing to do with the military.
What would you be more interested in? A pair of like 7-7 Eagles-Cowboys teams going at it,
or
a pair of 0-14 teams? Which game are you more likely to watch on Sunday night?
There is not even a question.
Exactly.
Unless I had a bet on it. Well, all right, 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline, if you want to jump on in. By the way, Kenyon Drake has broken off a 36-yard run on the first play from scrimmage for Arizona. I don't think San Francisco has given up that many rushing yards the last month. Let's take a phone call to the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. We go bring in Ken. Ken, good afternoon. How's it going?
Oh, great, guys. Happy Halloween. How are you?
Yeah, you too.
So, adding a little chaos to your scenario here for the 0-14, the toilet bowl, you ready?
Yeah.
So, they're 0-14, both teams. They have complete and absolute just futility on offense. It goes down to field goals. They're tied 3-3, go to overtime, and they end up tying 3-3. So, they don't win, but they both remain defeated but have a tie with the same amount of points. Then what happens?
Wow. Well, because they're in the same conference, and if they're winless, and then it would go to conference record, they eventually would get down to points, I think, among common opponents. I mean, that's like the seventh tiebreaker. It would get that crazy, but they would sort it out.
And how awesome would it be if they got to common opponents and someone had to play an opponent later and they just tanked and didn't score? Or even they wrote the league and said, is there a chance to get negative points tonight so we can have the first
game? How could we get in the negative column, Ken?
That's what I'd go for.
I like it. I'm looking forward to it. Take it easy. Well, it depends, because in a division, the second tiebreaker is division record. Then you get into head-to-head, games played within the conference, strength of victory, strength of schedule, best combined ranking among all teams in points scored and points allowed, net points in common games, net points in all games. Now we're down to 11. Best net touchdowns in all games. You know what the 12th tiebreaker is?
No, but I'm excited.
Coin toss.
Coin toss! Yes!
If the Dolphins and Bengals come down to a coin toss,
that needs to be prime time. That needs to be a pay-per-view event to watch a coin toss. I need to know who is flipping the coin. How many coins has he flipped before? Are you going, who gets to call the coin toss? That's also
very important. Right.
Is it alphabetical?
Are they
going
to flip a coin?
Right? Who gets to call the first coin flip? I mean, there's so many things that go on there. What kind of coin? How much does the coin weigh? Is the coin simply, does it have a Bengals logo on one side and a Dolphins logo on the other? Do the coins, do those sides weigh differently?
You are way too excited about this.
It's the most fun thing that can happen this year because my Falcons are terrible and I don't want to talk about anything else anymore.
By the way, once upon a time in the NBA, if teams finished with an identical record for the worst record in the league, they flipped a coin. That's how the Celtics got Bob Cousy, and I think it's how the Bucks got Kareem. A coin toss. All right, that brings us to break time, because I'll tell you what, there's no way any person or producer or team has spent that much time on a hypothetical game in 2 months in the history of sports radio. We'll be back with a break. We'll do an update, a Coors Light update, and we'll have more sports talk. 95.3 The Score.
They're black,
they're brown,
they're up,
they're down,
they're in,
they're out,
they're all above,
they're far,
they're near,
they're gone,
they're here.
Quick and slick.
They're insincere.
Beware.
Sports Talk with Steve Tannen is brought to you by Guarantee RV Supercenters. Name one of America's top 5 RV dealers. They don't just sell fun, they guarantee it. See over 700 options for every budget at Guarantee.com.
Every single week we have a different Baker Mayfield discussion. Every single week. And they're 2-5 and their season is on the brink. And when he tweets, his urgency is at an all-time high. That's good, because this team is 2-5 and its season is on the ropes and they're about to be knocked out like they are every other year in Cleveland. Everybody thought that this was going to be a different kind of season, and it has not been.
Ha ha, Stamp
collector, Baker Mayfield, 2-5. By the way, now with this Kenyon Drake dude from now with the Arizona Cardinals, they scored a touchdown on his first drive. I can't tell you how many gifs I've seen of George yelling at Jerry and Elaine. I told you the Drake was bad. I hate the Drake. Pro Football Talk retweeted it with a comment, I love the Drake. So we got that going for us, which is nice. So I was trying to kind of paint the current NFL playoff picture, and Nick and I ended up obsessing over the 12 different tiebreakers that could be used to determine who gets the number one pick, the Dolphins or the Bengals. And most importantly, we kind of forgot who. I don't see a consensus number one now.
Oh, yeah, the quarterback, it's very much a toss-up. The thing is that apparently the Dolphins have just been gearing up for Tua. So if the Dolphins get the chance to take Tua, they're going to take him. And then after that, it could be anything. Is it Chase Young? Is it Joe Burrow? Is it Jalen Hurts. Is it Herbert?
Jalen
Hurts,
they're going to be a top quarterback.
Is it Eason? Is it Fromm? Like, there's
they
like,
could be Eason or Fromm.
There's
either.
Nine other options.
They're an offensive lineman or something?
Maybe. I think Chase Young is that guy, maybe.
Oh, Chase Young, what would you leave us this time?
I just, like, it, there's a complete toss-up as to where you could go. The Dolphins also, because the Steelers aren't very good, have a second first-round pick. Do they go wide receiver with Jerry Jeudy? Do they go one of the guys from Clemson? Do they go offensive line?
Is Hunter Renfro still available?
Hunter Renfro might still be eligible and out there. He's playing baseball and football now professionally.
He's the best.
You could go 19 different ways with this draft because there's a lot of talented people available. And well, the teams that are bad need all of the talent that's up there.
Well, my point is, why tank so hard if there's like five or six guys you're not really sold on? So let the other team go first, blow it because it's the Bengals or the Dolphins, and you then are down to four. You could fill a line. You could get a quarterback. So we'll see. Anyway, it may come down, if the first 11 tiebreakers don't work, we've discovered, it comes down to just flipping a coin. And one of our Dolphin fan friends said, because they make him drink so much, the coin should be one of those AA chips. So that's kind of brutal. So here's how we stand. Well, on our feet. The current playoff picture, as you know, because they're unbeaten, the Niners would be the one in the NFC. The Saints and Packers, by the way, both 7-1, vying for the two. They have not played, thus it's about better conference record. Slight edge to New Orleans, 5-1 versus, it can't be Green Bay. Oh, conference record, yeah. Green Bay's 4-1. By the way, let's not forget, 3 weeks from Sunday, Packers at Niners. Dallas right now is the East winner. They would be the NFC 4 seed. Wild cards to Seattle and Minnesota. Two teams who will hook up Monday, December 2nd, at Seattle. Right now, the Seahawks have the better NFC record. Teams that remain in the hunt, Rams at 5-3, Carolina 4-3, Eagles 4-4, hanging around, nothing to do but frown. Rainy days and Mondays always get them down. Is there a more secure bet in football right now than the Patriots being the one seed in the AFC? I mean, especially with the Mahomes injury. They're unbeaten. They're not even challenged. You got the Ravens and Colts next. So new Baltimore versus old Baltimore. Right now, Indianapolis has a half-game lead due to a better record in the AFC. KC is the four. They're the only team in the division out west with a out west. Like, I live in the east still. They're the only team in the AFC West with a winning record. And the word I heard, which you will relate, CBS this morning, Patrick Mahomes will practice more this week than last. But I don't think he's not playing this week against the Vikings. I mean, come on. He's not going to go till he's fully healed. And now you got the Buffalians. Buffalo is the wild card leader at 5-2. Houston looms at 5-3. Buffalo, the Buffali, host Washington this week. And so with a 3-win team currently qualifying, you still have Pittsburgh, Jacksonville, Tennessee, and the Raiders with 4 losses to Oakland, and the Steelers are a game under at 3-4 hanging around. And if I didn't mention your team, they're not within a game of at least a wild card spot. So, you know, the joy of the NFL right now is you go on a 2-game winning streak from 3-4, and it's like, yeah, we're right in it. You might not be in a division race, but you might have a chance of, like, hosting wild card weekend. All right, 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline, if you'd like to drop on in. Yeah, a couple of texters. Seems that when something big happens with Oregon and we don't mention it every half hour, some people want to know if we've heard about it. Yeah, from yesterday, by the way, we've got internet here now at Cumulus. They've decided the $48 a month was totally worth it. The Oregon women, number one, first time ever in the preseason poll. But they're not only number one. I mean, they're number one. It's not unanimous. Baylor's number two with 3 first place votes. The Duke's got 25. And if you haven't seen, I posted it on my Twitter account, at SportsTalk953. One of the kids at the athletic department went for Halloween dressed as Sabrina, had her uni on and a goat head, which meant greatest of all time, and really big yellow Nikes. And they kind of set her up, and Sabrina saw the kid and just lost it laughing. And as always, she plays, she lives with joy. And it's uplifting, it's heartwarming, it's very Sabrina. So they had their scrimmage. By the way, you see she splashed the buzzer beater from half court at the end of the scrimmage? Unbelievable. So they're number one. A week from Saturday, they'll host the U.S. Women's National Team at Matthew Knight Arena at 4 o'clock. It's when Oregon football is on a bye, followed by the Oregon men taking on Boise State. But we're going to have Nneka Ogumike, who's going to join us a week from tomorrow on the show. The Stanford super-duper star, first pick in the WNBA draft, an MVP, a WNBA champion, and just just fantastic young woman who I'm totally stoked to talk with next Friday, a week from Friday. All right, that said, by the way, they're not playing in San Francisco. I just saw that they had to replace a chunk of turf in Arizona. It's like, I thought that was reserved exclusively for Santa Clara. All right, break time. We'll be back. We'll have Tweet of the Day wrap up Thursday, 95.3 The Score.
And now, it's the Coors Light refreshing Tweet of the Day.
They are trending, twittering, tweeting, you name it.
On Sports Talk with Steve Tannen.
LOL, laugh out loud, OMG, oh my God, WTF, why the face?
Coors Light, the world's most refreshing beer.
Hi, everybody.
Hey, Doc Nick.
I host Steve Nick Rogers here at the Coors Light Frost Brewed Sports Desk. Whoop. The Coors Light refreshing tweet of the day. Coors Light, the world's most refreshing beer. From last night, some really good tweets from John Boys of SB Nation. Congratulations to Walgreens. The Nationals won the World Series because the W's are exactly the same. And from at Grant Brisby of The Athletic, the Washington Nationals and Seattle Mariners continue to share the record for fewest home World Series wins. It's one of the bigger jokes before anything of the Washington just winning the pennant was, whoa, wow, look at you, Seattle. You haven't done anything. I guess we can still make fun of the Nats for not winning at home anymore. At George Schroeder, a little late to this, but happy 68th birthday, Nick Saban. Parentheses, also happy Halloween, not drawing any conclusions or anything. Just saying. It makes sense that Nick Saban, whose name rhymes with Satan, would be born on Halloween. Not saying.
I didn't realize that. And you don't have to be saying because you're saying.
I'm saying. Steve took a kind of creepy photo of me because he didn't tell me he was going to take it. But if you want to see what my desk looks like here at work, I'm wearing a Rangers jersey today. I got to say, I like not only the feel of the jersey, but I'm not against it. I like the blue color. I like the font on it. It's a good jersey.
Ranger jerseys?
Yeah.
Come on. They're cool. The red, white, and blue. What are you, nuts?
They're very good. So, yeah, I'm confused sports fan. I'm wearing a I've got all four major sports covered. So if you see me trick-or-treat, which you probably won't because I'm not going to be going trick-or-treating because I'm an adult. But our tweets of the day have to do with what @SBNation tweeted about the scariest sports story you can tell in 6 words. So we had a couple replies come in. Seahawks did not run the ball.
Oh.
That's from @TheKinchellis on Twitter. From @MountBooble, coconut up and higher Lane Kiffin. That's pretty, more or less a good sports story you can tell. And one more. Tom Brady, Super Bowl 75 MVP. But our tweet of the day from @Jeromney on the 6 words, scariest sports story in 6 words. Brady Hoke to replace Don Pelham.
Weebles wobble, but they don't fall down. Yeah, that played right into our longtime sports talk theory. Never think you can't get worse.
Also, if you want to see Tyrell Crosby's Halloween costume, he dressed up like Medea, when it looks spectacular. All of our other tweets of the day, the back of my head, all of that and more with our interviews, our podcast is all on our Twitter, our Facebook, our Instagram, @953thescore. Yeah, that's what I just said. Steve's on Twitter @SportsTalk953. I'm on Twitter @RickNodgers. Don't be a jerk. Just do it.
I think I retweeted that SB Nation thing about the 6 scariest words in sports, and I said, and the New York Knicks pick.
Oh, gosh.
Because that's just, since 85, that hasn't gone well. And let's just leave it at that. Oh, the horror! So I haven't been paying attention much to this foosball game that's on there. But what else did we need? What else did we desperately need to get to? Right. You know how I go nuts over little sporting history and tidbits? So with Stevie Strasburg winning the MVP of the World Series last night, and the MVP of the NBA Finals was Kawhi Leonard. Both went to San Diego State.
City.
First time that has ever happened in the majors. Well, you know, first of all, historically in the NHL, a lot of the guys don't come out of college as opposed to, you know, obviously college football, college basketball, and more so in the last quarter century of college baseball. But who was it that somebody pointed out could happen in the future? Oh, man, it was a good one, and I totally forgot. I bricked. My bad. I'm sorry I took the money. I'm not sorry. So anyway, how wacky was that wrap to the World Series? Houston had the best home record, 60-21. They got 4 games in the World Series, and they done lost them all. We've had the, and a couple people have asked if that's ever happened. No, it never happened the first 6 games, much less the first 7. Now, we've had World Series where the home teams have won exclusively that 1991 series and 1987 series, I believe, both involving the Minnesotians, the Twins, you know, the famous Kirby Puckett homer, and we'll see you tomorrow night.
Off the top of your head, was Eli Manning a Super Bowl MVP?
Yeah, twice.
Okay.
Ole Miss.
He was the last NFL number one overall pick to win an MVP in a Super Bowl. I did a Pro Football Reference search. Von Miller's the only other one, but he went number 2 overall.
Peyton Manning won the MVP of the 07 Super Bowl when the Colts beat the Bears.
I meant by pick.
Yeah, Peyton was number 1 overall.
I know, but not, I'm saying the most recent by pick, not most recent by to have won a Super Bowl. I'm trying to think of the last guy who was picked in like the top three of the draft to win an MVP, okay. Not the last Super Bowl who happened to have a number one winner.
I'll tell you. Oh no, he didn't. What am I thinking? He didn't win it. So it'll be interesting how many number one, two, or three baseball players have been World Series MVP, because Strasburg went one. Right. Yeah, I might want to make a note of that one. First of all, we've gone through this before. It's not really a recipe for high-level success if you get picked in the MLB draft. I mean, number one picks to win the NBA Finals MVP. Magic won it. Worthy won it. Kareem won it. Duncan won it. Kawhi was a mid-first-round pick. With football, I mean, Elway was the number one pick. He's won it. Peyton's won it. Eli's won it. Plunkett was the MVP in the 81 Super Bowl. So I guess you have to be a number one pick to win the, almost choked. LeBron was a finals MVP. He was a number one overall pick. So how about number one overall picks to win the Conn Smythe? Sid the Kid was the number one overall pick. I'd assume Lemieux was. Gretzky was. Was Ovi a number one pick?
No, because Ovi was the same draft at... Or no, he was a number one. He was the year after Sid the Kid. Something... They either went 1-2
There's
in the same draft,
there.
Or they went 1-2, and like one of them was drafted during the lockout. And I think it was Ovi.
It was Ovechkin was the number one pick in 04.
And then
they had the lockout.
And then Sid was the number one pick, and then they both debuted together.
Both have won the Conn Smythe as a top overall pick. Although, you know, I'm saying this, but I'm not 1,000,000% sure that Gretzky... I mean, it would seem like Gretzky probably should have been the number one pick. It doesn't even say when he did it. All right, either way, tomorrow morning... We'll be back at you. The IHOP at Gateway. Duck Talk Live, courtesy of our friends at Bi-Mart. And our special guest will be one Dino Filial, ace duck running back, who starred during the 1994 run to the Rose Bowl. So that should be fun. And like we've said, come on down. And if you're there between 8 and 9, they'll hook you up with free duck pancakes.
They're delicious.
And we'll talk about many things and get your weekend off and rolling. I mean, talk about back-to-back nail biters to pretty much secure the North. Now an opportunity to get a quality win against the South leader on the road, which means, in essence, Oregon fans, to make the playoff, have to win out and hope Utah wins out until they get to the Pac-12 championship game and win the South, and Oregon can help them by knocking off USC on Saturday. So it's a vicious cycle, and we appreciate everybody listening. Have a healthy, safe Halloween night, and we'll be back tomorrow with Crunch Time and Sports Talk on 95.3 The Score.